You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer with you again this week for Series 4, Episode 6. We're on to now, John. We're flying along nicely, but it is going to be probably a bit of a reduced show tonight. Obviously, we are in the midst of the Cheltenham Festival, so personally, I'm very busy in my workplace. And John, you're trying to get a top on the coronavirus at the moment in your line of work.
Yeah, so for those that aren't aware, I'm a pharmacist and, you know, if I had a quid for every time I've been asked for hand sanitizer or surgical masks, I'd have enough money to have more money than John Delaney.
So you haven't resorted to selling them for €150 like some pharmacies, no?
No, that's disgraceful behaviour. No, absolutely not. I was had the hand sanitizer at £2.95, and I just can't get the surgical mask. So, you know, that's just That's just the way it is at the moment. But Kieran, I'm sick to death of coronavirus. Get on with the show.
Yeah. Well, my trip to Slovakia is gone. Yours to Venice last week fell by the wayside. My trip to Slovakia is gone. So I'm afraid we are going to have to talk about coronavirus on the show tonight, John, because we have Jack Brady on the show tonight. He's a school teacher by trade, and he's obviously Shelburne goalkeeper come Friday nights. And obviously, you know, school teachers are going to be affected by this potentially. So we've had to chat to Jack about that in the interview. And obviously we've had this statement today from the FAI, John. I know you're only in from work yourself. You may not have seen it, but talks will continue over the possibility of perhaps League of Ireland games having to be cancelled. What would you make of that if that was to be the case?
To be honest, Kieran, I know we're talking about, we talked about St. Patrick's Day parades and the likes being cancelled, but it does make common sense to cancel any of these anything where there's a lot of people in one place. So even if there's more than like 25, 30 people, it's going to get worse. So the more we can do to prevent the spread of this coronavirus, the better it's going to be. So I know we might be without a bit of football or the matches behind closed doors, but you know, there is a really good reason for it.
Yeah, look, I don't want to stick on this too long. I want to get to the football, but you're talking about the possibility of playing games behind closed doors or them called off altogether. As we know, we were touching on it last week in a totally different context about the prize money in this league, about the lack of a TV deal. How are clubs going to survive if they don't have football for potentially maybe 4 to 6 weeks?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty disastrous, but hopefully that's where maybe the government can arrange some kind of help. I wouldn't be too hopeful on that side of things, but there has to be some kind of consideration taking place. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to be affected by this. You know, even look at myself and my wife's situation where we both work full-time. If the school's closed, it's going to be a real mess. You know, one of us is going to have to be at home with the kids. So it's, there's going to be a lot of upset going forward. And, for League of Ireland clubs without a match for 4 to 6 weeks, it's potentially disastrous.
Yeah, look, last point in this, our former guest on the show, John O'Sullivan, he's wrote a piece for the 42 on this today, and he is very much in the camp of, he thinks it is time to call games off. He just doesn't see gatherings of any sort been making sense at this point. You work in the medical profession to a certain extent. You seem to be falling into that same camp, even though it could be detrimental, as we've said, to the league.
Look, it's all about safety, isn't it, Kieran? I mean, just look at the amount of deaths today in Lombardy in Italy alone, and do we really want the same type of numbers here? Absolutely not. It would be devastating for us. So the more we can do now to prevent the spread of this, the better. So if it comes to calling off matches, we have to call off matches.
Well, what a really great positive start to this week's show. let's chat about some football now, and we'll start with the Premier Division review this week, and we'll start with the game that was live on Air Sport on Saturday night. And I have to say, I actually really enjoy being able to sit down on a Saturday night and watch a live game. I think that's something that we need to look at going forward staggering out the live television coverage. Instead of having it on a Friday night when everyone's at a game, let's put it on a Saturday night and be able to enjoy it. It was Sligo 2, Shamrock Rovers 3, so plenty of goals in this one, although, John, I didn't think the quality was overly great.
No, I mean, this was two teams that couldn't have had more contrasting starts to the season, could they? I mean, Rovers flying, Shamrock Rovers, that is. Sligo, disastrous starts to the season. But I'm totally in agreement with you about the coverage. I'd like to see it, and I'd like to see it on terrestrial TV as well more, you know, a lot more of that for those that can't afford or don't get the air sport for whatever reason. But that's going to come down to my friend Mr. Quinn and the FAA, isn't it, to renegotiate. But it's great to see more matches on TV anyway.
Mm. There was a bit of criticism for the pitch, but I think with the current weather conditions, I think that's probably a bit harsh on Sligo. It did cut up quite badly, but it is usually a very good surface at the Showgrounds. I don't think there's an awful lot they can do about that, given the weather conditions at the moment. Compared to some other pitches this weekend, which were in very poor nick, and they've been in poor nick quite a bit down recent seasons. So we might chat about that later on. But I'd have sympathy for Sligo. I think they usually have a really good footballing surface there. And look, it cut up on the night, but that was to be expected. And it definitely did have an effect on the game. But I thought Shamrock Rovers were good value for the win without really ever getting out of second or third gear.
Yeah, I thought Sligo had a decent first half, actually. They did okay. I've said that on the other foot, the one player that's really impressive and really kicking on this season is Ferrugia. He's and it was his he shot across goal early on as a bit of a warning shot before Finn, he fed Byrne, who shot to the corner to make it 1-0. But as I say, Sligo had a decent first half, Kieran, and I was quite impressed with them. To say I'd written them off already this season. They got a penalty as Lopez, who had been singing the praises of the other week. He turned from hero to villain. He took out Corley, and Coughlin, he scored it nicely for 1-1. But I thought in the second half, Rovers really stepped up a gear, Kieran.
A few points I'm going to pick you up on there. Just the opening goal, great finish from Byrne, but I thought Sligo were unfortunate. They had a man, their centre half had just gone off through injury, and I think if he was on the pitch, he might have been a little bit tighter to Byrne. I thought the space Byrne got in the penalty area was a little bit criminal, to be honest. Fantastic goal, don't take anything away from the attacking player, but Sligo can't be giving him that space in the area. You thought Sligo were good in the first half. I thought they were extremely poor in the first half. But when they got the penalty, they then had a nice little flurry for the final 5-10 minutes of that half. And they started the second half quite brightly as well. But as I said, I don't think Rovers ever got out of second or third gear on the night, and they still won with a bit in hand in the end. I know Sligo got a couple of goals, but the second goal came with virtually the last kick, and there's a question mark over whether that one should have stood. Your views on the penalty? I thought it was a penalty. There's not an awful lot of contact, but Lopez doesn't get the ball. I think if you're flying in like that, you have to make sure you get the ball. What was your views on it?
Oh, 100% penalty to me, Kieran. He definitely took Corley out. Stonewall, as far as I was concerned, it was 100% penalty, Kieran.
I didn't think there was a lot of contact, John. But as I said, if you're flying in like that, you have to get the ball and not be given the referee.
You have to get the ball, otherwise you put yourself at risk all the time of giving away a penalty. And it was clumsy and daft, really. So yeah, no doubt to me, it was a penalty. You're always going to see him given when you get clattered like that.
But overall, Rovers, Shamrock Rovers, 100% record still intact, and Jack Byrne, I thought, was absolutely phenomenal again.
Yeah, second half, like I say, they stepped up a gear. He had a couple of opportunities, didn't he? He shot wide, he shot the keeper. He was very, very influential. Their second goal was a nice finish from McAniff. Good to see him in the goals to make it 2-1. And then substitute Dylan Watts pulled the ball back for Aaron Green to strike over 3-1. I've got an apology, haven't I? Any fella that celebrates by eating a chip,
yes.
He's my hero now, Kieran.
Yeah, that
my absolute hero. So no more criticism, Aaron Green.
That was peak greatest league in the world stuff, I have to say. Anyone that didn't see it at the time, Green, he was getting a bit of stick off the Sligo fans. Obviously, he's a former Sligo player. And he was celebrating in front of the Sligo Ultras, we'll call them, and someone decided to lob their chips onto the pitch, and Green obliged by picking them up and eating
them. Because, I tell you what, having been to Sligo a few times, their chips are brilliant. It's probably one of the best chippers in the league. What are you doing, fans? Chucking your chips on the pitch?
Yeah, the boom must be back, because I'm sure they're not cheap, probably 4 or 5 quid for a bag. But no, it was brilliant from Green. And You'll remember a couple of weeks ago, John, I made this point to you that when he doesn't have time to think about it, he's a great finisher. And that's what we've seen there. He took no touch. He just put his foot through the ball into the top corner. Unbelievable goal. Whereas we've seen last week in Tala, when he was one-on-one with Gary Rogers and he had loads of time to think about it, he shanked it wide. So he's added one side. He's a bit more clinical, but when he has time to think about things, he's probably overcomplicating it slightly and trying to pick out that top corner all the time.
I think he's going to get plenty of chances this season. That midfield's great, and he's got a bit of competition now for his place up front, hasn't he? So, that might bring him on the next level. Going back to the match, late consolation for Moran made it 3-2, but I thought deserved win for Shamrock Rovers on the night, Kieran.
Yeah, 100%. And you mentioned there the competition that Aaron Green is going to have now this season. After the game, that was a bit of the analysis on Air Sport. The panel didn't really feel that Gaffney and Green worked that well together and that we mightn't see that too often this season. If you had to pick a team next week for Rovers, would it be Green or Gaffney you'd go with?
I think I'd probably persist with the two. I mean, the old adage, try and get your two strikers up front. I think I'd go with the two of them, Kieran, to be honest, if I could. I mean, they've got a home match against Harps. It's surely, you look at that, it's very winnable, and you want to have two players up top for that kind of match, so I'd be picking them both.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of horses for courses by Stephen Bradley this season, as you said, a home game coming up against a team in Harps who won't be expected to be too high up on the table, so why not go with the two strikers?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I think we've given that game a good run through. Let's move on to Finn Harps. They lost 4-0 to Dundalk, John, but I don't think there was any shame in Finn Harps' performance. They created a couple of chances. I thought Dundalk, their wide players, just absolutely blew Harps away on the night.
Yeah, they were good, weren't they? I thought Duffy was very good, and Hooven was everywhere, wasn't he? He had an excellent game, and I think poor old Harps got. I think you might have said last week you were a bit worried for them in this match, but Dundalk certainly played really well in this, and I just thought Harps were a little outclassed here.
Yeah, I don't think there's any shame in that, though.
No, absolutely not. I mean, we're talking about the title winners last season and a team that'll be looking to do well in Europe. Hoban opened the scoring with a decent shot, but Harps could have equalised a nice shot from Mark Russell, which was, I thought, really good save from Rogers, just tipping it wide. It was a really good save for that. And who knows, at 1-1 it could have been a different game. Look, Duffy made it 2-0 eventually. Then Massey had a shot parried, which fell nicely to Hooban to make 3-0. Hooban again, he turned up at the other end. He cleared off the line after Harps caused absolute havoc from a corner, which Dundalk will be a bit questionable defending on that one. But the fourth game, when another Duffy shot, he seemed to be at the centre of everything, him and Hooban. His shot was parried. Sloggett followed up 4-0. Dundalk also hit the post. It could have been even worse for Harps, but Dundalk, very, very good value for that, and a bit of a warning shot for the rest of the league.
Yeah, I thought Hoban was just absolutely phenomenal on the night. His hold-up play was superb. That second goal where he plays Duffy in behind, I've seen that in Europe time after time from Hoban, where he drops deep and he brings the wide players in, and I thought it was a great performance from Dundalk, considering they were coming into this game off the back of a defeat. But plenty of positive for Finn Harps as well. I don't think they'll be too down after that one. Waterford 2, Derry 1. Derry might be a little bit down, John. They've not had the best of starts after all the positive talk we've given them.
Yeah, I think we did, didn't we? We talked a lot about it. We liked Declan Devine, but 4 points from, and just outside the relegation spot. I know it's early days, but it's not the greatest of starts. Waterford, well, they're a bit up and down, aren't they? I really like the look of Figueroa this season. I think his footwork's excellent, and it was a neat turn from him early on, which was a bit of a warning shot. He shot wide, and then Michael O'Connor shot at directly at Cherry there. The man we had on the show the other week, Jamie McDonough, he picked out Steve Mallon from a free kick to open the scoring. So it was 1-0 up for Derry, but a great shot from Sam Bone from the edge of the area. He equalised after a bit of dodgy defending from Derry. They failed to clear, but they have to get a bit better defensively, a bit smarter with that one. But then, a cracker, Shane Griffin. Whoa, was this absolute injury time winner with this one? Nearly last kick of the game, and it was a belter. Yeah, in Waterford.
Yeah, 94th minute. Two incredible goals in the one game from Waterford. Look, Derry after the game, Declan Devine came out. He said they weren't good enough. The better team on the night one. I thought Derry's first half performance was okay. Second half, Waterford definitely created a bit more. Again, you've mentioned there, Figueroa really stood out for Derry. He looks a bright light this season. But it's definitely a disappointing start. And I wonder, will Declan Devine maybe shake that team up a little bit now and make a couple of changes? He's not going to be pleased with that performance, particularly in the second half down in Waterford the other night. Again, though, I'm not overly worried. I do see plenty of quality in that Derry team. And while Waterford did create plenty in the second half, at the end of the day, Derry have been undone by two absolute wonder strikes in the end of that game.
Yeah, and you know, the thing I keep going back to with Derry is, they lost their entire front line, didn't they, at the close season? Parkhouse and Junior. And yeah, I know we've talked about it before, but that's very, very difficult to replace, Kieran. You know, you take your two goal-scoring players out of a team and it leaves a massive hole. And, I know we talked about Figueroa, but Derry are going to have to get some more goals out of that team pretty quickly.
Well, Nielsen hasn't chipped in yet, so the longer that goes, that's going to be a concern, because new players coming into the league, you want them to hit the ground running, so the sooner he can get a goal, the better. But we'll keep an eye on Derry over the next couple of weeks and see if they can steady the ship a little bit and be a bit more consistent.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll be fine, Kieran, but it's just a bit of a tricky start, isn't it? And, a couple of wins and they'll be right back on track, I would have thought.
St. Pat's 1, Cork 0. What did you make of St. Pat's performance, John?
Well, I thought they were decent. I thought they did what they had to. I think they'd have probably like to have won by a couple more goals in this one. I don't know. I just look. They'll be just happy they got their 3 points, to be honest. But I think they could have done better.
Yeah. Again, I think this is probably a result maybe that says more about Pats than it does about Cork. We weren't expecting much, if anything, from Cork. But St. Pats, we've highlighted from day one our concern in regards to the number of goals that might be in that forward line. And to only go and beat a Cork side that have shipped so many goals this season, 1-0, it does say the Pats are probably a little bit light up top, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it could have been a lot worse as well, because I don't know if you saw Keane Coleman, he shot straight at Clark instead. McGlade was in Acres' room. He had an open goal earlier, had to do a square to McGlade, and it would have been 1-1, but so it could have been worse for them. But having said that, they hit the bar as well, did Pats, but look, the proof's going to be in the pudding next week, isn't it? They have to go to Dundalk next week. So Stephen O'Donnell's going back to his old club, and he's going to get no favours there, is he? But let's talk a little bit about this match. Free kick forced to save from McNulty. McNulty obviously deputising, the other goalkeeper injured, and McClellan shot over for Pats. But the goal came from lovely diagonal ball from Lee Desmond. He fed King, and he made it 1-0. As I say, there was that chance for Keane Coleman, and Neil Fenn must have been just head in his hands, because all he had to do was square it for Dylan McGlade and that was 1-1, but instead he shot straight at Clark. I talked about Pats hitting the bar, that was through Martin Reddy, and then a fine chance again at the end for Cork. Really, Rayon Dillon, he should have done so much better. He headed over from no distance, and again, that should have been an equaliser. So, look, there was plenty of warnings there for Pats, and some would say they were very lucky to come out of that 1-0.
It was a phenomenal ball from Desmond, though, wasn't it? And a really good finish from Billy King, who's caught the eye early doors. And, just since we were talking about it earlier on TV coverage and the likes and promoting the league, isn't it great that the goals are so quickly available now online? I mean, I seen that Billy King goal within an hour or two of the game ending, and that's the way forward for this league. Aside from obviously the financial side of things, if we're going to promote it and get it out there, people need to be able to see moments of brilliance like that almost as soon as it happens.
Yeah, and it's great to see the highlights, and for both divisions going up as well, so it's good to see. What did you make of Cork in this one? Any signs of improvement, Kieran?
Look, as you said, they created a couple of chances, but I'm still very worried for them, John.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I just think they're lacking a bit of quality, aren't they?
Yeah, they're lacking quality.
You can definitely, as we've said time and time again, about the reduction in the wage budget there, and it's glaringly obvious. It's not the same pot to play with as John Caulfield, that's for sure.
No, they're lacking quality. They're lacking experience. But the only thing that might save them this season is, I don't think there's going to be an awful lot between the bottom two and probably up to maybe sixth or seventh in the table. So they're probably not going to get cut adrift like they might have done in other years. I think points teams down at the bottom are going to take an awful lot of points off each other. We'll see how that develops with Cork over the next couple of weeks. But Neil Finn's probably not panicking just yet, even though, you know, there is some glaringly obvious concerns about Cork this year. Let's move on to another game that was live on Friday night on RT, and it was the Dublin Derby at Dalymount. Bows 2-0 winners against Shells, but I thought Shells were the far better side in the first half.
Yeah, it was a bit lackluster, wasn't it, from Bows in the first half? I was expecting a real humdinger this one to start with, but there wasn't too much of excitement in the first half, I didn't think.
The pitch didn't help, John, did it?
The better chance of the first half. Sorry?
The pitch didn't help at all. The pitch was absolutely horrendous.
No. Shepherd had that chance, didn't he? He headed at the goalkeeper there in the first half. But in the second half, I thought the game came alive a bit more, especially in Bo's favour in the second half with Dobson. He shot wide, didn't he? There was a Danny Grant cross, which was knocked back by Chris Twardek, and Andre Wright headed in for that 1-0 opener. But I thought the defending by Shells was poor there for that goal, didn't you?
I thought it was just good attacking play. I thought, as you said, in the second half, Bowes, I thought they went at Shells a bit more and got plenty of crosses into the box and caused problems for Shells. Look, Shells should be tighter to man in the area. They shouldn't be letting a goal like that go in. But I like to give credit to the attacking players where it's due. And Grant and Twardek in that second half in particular, they caused an awful lot of problems for Shells and they got their rewards.
Yeah, Dobbs had a chance. He headed at the goalkeeper, but it was Twardek who picked out Mandrew and he chipped the ball into the corner. It was a great finish, actually, 2-0. And Glenn McCauley should have made it 3, but he hit wide after another cracking through ball from Chris Twardek. And it finished 2-0. And for me, I have a couple of talking points I want to ask you about. I just think Twardek goes from strength to strength here, and he's looking a real player, isn't he? And he's settled into that team really well.
Yeah, he mightn't score an awful lot of goals, I don't think, but he's going to create so many. You've seen his bit of footwork just to create a yard for himself and get that cross into the area for one of the goals. I thought he was really, really good again on what was a difficult pitch, so probably didn't suit him in particular, a player that likes to dribble and get at players. But I thought he was really good again, and he started really well at Dalymount Park.
Yeah, and the other thing I was going to ask you about is Aaron Dobbs. I eyebrows were raised when he signed for Shells. What have you made of his start, Kieran, there?
Well, it's funny, John, because I was going to ask you about Aaron Dobbs. he had a couple of really good chances in that first half, didn't he? And he just snatched at them. And it just reminded me so much of his time at Longford. The first couple of months at Longford, we were always saying he just needs a goal. If he gets himself a goal, he'll be fine, because he's got a bit of pace to get in behind. People say that his hold-up play is very good, but I personally never saw that with Longford. I thought he was very easily brushed aside. I didn't think his work ethic was great at times. But again, when you speak to people that see him in training every day, they say how good he is in training and how hard he works. But I just don't see it on the pitch. Maybe, as I said, it's down to confidence. And if he can get one, he'll get up and running. But there was times at Longford where he did eventually get a goal here or there, and he still just couldn't fire. So I personally don't think he's for the grade for a Premier Division team like Shells. I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
No, I completely agree. Anybody think we actually had a script for this, Kieran? Wouldn't we? Asking the same things. But I think he's struggling a little bit to adapt to play in the top league, and he desperately needs a couple of goals, doesn't he, to get himself going. And like I said, I was surprised when Shell signed him, and I'm not surprised that he's struggled a little bit to start with, because I mean you're coming up against better quality defences, and he was hardly prolific for Longford last season.
No.
I know you talked about his build up play and stuff like that, but to me, he's a striker, he needs to score goals.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, he couldn't be playing with a better strike partner in Kilduff, someone that's experienced and someone that'll knock balls down and flick them down to him. And on paper, it looks a good partnership, because, as I said, Dobbs does have that bit of pace. But as you said, if he's not going to put the ball in the net, then he simply is not going to cut it at that level. Look, let's hear from one of his teammates, Jack Brady. He's had a good start to life back in the Premier. He had a brief spell in the Premier Division with Limerick before they were relegated. But I think this is very much the start of Jack Brady's Premier Division career. So let's hear from him now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Okay, so I'm delighted to say we're joined on the show tonight by Shelburne's number one, Jack Brady. Jack, welcome back to the show.
Kieran, it's lovely to talk to you again. Yeah. Hope all is good.
Yeah, it's been a while, Jack. Since we last spoke to you, you were obviously with Limerick last season. I might ask you a little bit about that later on, but you moved to Shells in pre-season, and I have to say, fair play to you, you've lived up to myself and John Breyer's prediction early on. We said on one of the first shows of the season that you wouldn't be too long in getting that number one jersey. And I think it's fair to say you're off to a flyer at Talca Park, aren't you?
Yeah, Kieran. I think obviously since the start of the season, we had set ourselves kind of achievable goals and looked at what kind of games, what kind of teams we can go up against and actually try and win the games. And I think a couple of people have been surprised by a couple of the results that we sprung so far, and the fact that we had a couple of clean sheets as well. But we knew exactly what we were going to be capable of, and we spoke about it all pre-season, and the manager kind of alluded to it and said that, you know, we're going to go after teams, we're going to try and finish as high as we can, we're not just looking at staying up. That was never the intention for the year. So starting off to a flyer, yeah, I agree with you to an extent. But and even the games we lost, I think we could have got something out of the Dundalk game, and I thought we were unfortunate not to come away from Bohemians with a result as well, based on our first half performance. As you said, I think we've started really well, and I'm kind of just hoping in the next couple of weeks with a lot of games coming up that we can push on and kind of stabilise ourselves now.
Yeah, well, I was actually more referencing yourself, the fact you've come into a new club so quickly and you've grabbed that number one jersey fairly early on, and I think you've probably caught the eye in a couple of games as well with your performances. But let's talk about Shelburne point of view. As you said, maybe not a flyer as such, but off to a flyer by winning the first game, put it up to Dundalk then in Talca Park, and you won the derby against St Pat's as well. Obviously disappointing against Bowes last time, but I thought the first half performance was really good. What was your thoughts on the game against Bowes last time out?
Yeah, as you said, we had a couple of really good performances to start us off, and I think that gave us great confidence going into the Bohemians game. To be honest with you, I thought we were on top in the first half. Probably unlucky not to go in at half time ahead, to be honest. And I've alluded to it. The Bohemians are so dangerous for me because they're very, very good at grinding out and defending when they have to. Especially at home in Dalymount the last couple of seasons, Keith Long has done a really, really good job of actually solidifying a certain style of play that they have. And I think they only had two or three shots on target in the whole game, and they scored both of them. And I think that just shows how clinical they can be and why they finished where they did last year. It just shows in this league, and I think it's a massive learning curve for our players, that if you don't take your chances when you get the opportunity in the Premier Division, you will inevitably be punished by the other team. And it doesn't matter who they are, whether they're at the top of the league or whether they're at the bottom of the league, other teams will always create chances, and you'll only have a purple patch for a couple of minutes. And if you don't take your opportunities, then you're in big trouble. And I think that was highlighted on Friday. You look at our performance in the first half, as you said, and I thought we played really, really well, got the ball into the box and created a lot of chances. And then, obviously, at halftime, Bohemians essentially, I think, well, survived us going forward and came out in the second half a much, much different team. And they capitalised on a couple of mistakes that we made, and that's the nature of this league, in my opinion.
Yeah, would you agree? It was their wide players that done the damage on Friday. Mandrew, with that, I'm going to ask you about his goal in a moment, but before that as well, Danny Grant with a great cross into the area, and it was headed back across, and that's how the opening goal came. Maybe you're going to tell me defensively you could have done better, but I thought from an attacking point of view that their wide players really did damage on Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think teams are going to need to be aware of them going forward as well. I think you look at Twardek on one wing and Grant on the other. They're quick, but quick, direct, and really, really good on the break, and good, really good deliveries into the box. I wouldn't necessarily criticise our defending massively, because the way I look at it was that they just have really good, powerful players coming into the box, and we just failed to deal with it at the time. If you look at any other clips from the game, I know Soccer Republic will only show the goals really and things like that, and people will talk and whatever, that's fine, but we defended really, really well at other stages in the game, and I just think it just shows again the quality that Bowes have to keep hammering away and eventually creating the opportunity for themselves to score. But as you said, I think going forward, you look at their wingers and their front players, and that's the where the real danger is with a team like Bohemians. They're only going to get better as well as Dalymount improves, as the pitch improves, and going into the summer. So they'll definitely be a force to be reckoned with again for the rest of the year. So we'll have to be ready for them when we catch them again.
and you had the bird's eye view. Tell us, do you think Mandrew meant that, or was it a miss hit cross?
If Danny's listening to this now, I'm absolutely not having that. There's absolutely no chance he's meant to put that straight into the goal. So I hope he hears this.
I'm sure he's listening. But look, let's go back to yourself and your own personal story. Obviously, myself and John know you very well from your time at Longford. You started out well at Longford, but then maybe didn't get as much game time as you liked. You moved on to Limerick, and look, Limerick as a club had its challenges, but you obviously did enough to make a name for yourself there to get a move to Shells. How would you describe your career so far?
Well, yeah, no, I agree with you, and there's no shame in it at all, and I'll be very honest. I'm always very honest when I speak about it. I just think the most important thing for me when I was around, when I was 20, 21, was to go and actually get games. And to be honest, like, I saw Mick Kelly come in, done really well at Longford, and obviously I was left out of the squad. I had to go and try and force my way into a new club and try and get game time somewhere else. And luckily, Tommy Barrett was very good to me, Limerick, and gave me the opportunity. And I just done really, really well. Played every game last year, and I think that was massive for me. I think I needed to go and play as many games as I could before I was felt that I was really ready to step up and play Premier Division football and play against the big teams and really, really challenge myself. And thank God I got the opportunity again this year, and I got an opportunity to move into the Premier Division. And obviously, it's been great to play the first four games, and I felt fairly comfortable in the game so far. It's been a great experience, and as you said, it was probably about me going and actually trying to get experience somewhere else that I could use. Even though, as you said, at somewhere like Limerick where they've experienced their issues, they were still very good to me and gave me a really good opportunity to develop as a player and grow. And I think it's really, really bared fruit for myself anyway. It's great.
Was it difficult for you last season though to stay focused and maintain a certain level of focus in every game with everything that was going on?
Absolutely, and there's no hiding away from it. Like, we had constantly distracted by things that were going on internally within the club, and things to do with where we were going to train. Obviously, not getting paid was a major issue. Obviously, that's going to lead naturally to the demotivation of players, because you're being made promises, and they just couldn't be kept by the higher powers in the club. And that was unfortunate, because when we were getting paid earlier on in the season, we were up in first and second place after the first round of the fixtures. It just showed the players that we had, the quality we had in the squad, could have actually gone on to do really, really well. And I'm happy to see that a couple of players have actually found clubs going into this year, because it would be an awful waste to see a club like Limerick and suffer massively, and the local players suffer massively because of the mistakes of certain groups. And for me, I see that the way I look at it is that Limerick is a regionalised club. It's very difficult for younger players, especially, to try and move and stay inside the League of Ireland. And I think that's going to be detrimental, especially for the younger age groups, the 19s and 17s, because obviously, there's a big debate about what kind of team, and who's going to represent the Limerick in the League of Ireland underage setup this year. And it's very hard for players to actually go and find clubs, especially if they're tied down with a college and they're living at home. So I'm very glad to see a couple of players gone to Cove. Obviously, a couple of players gone to Finn Harps as well. A couple of good signings, so they moved into the Premier Division, which is great. Obviously, I went to Dublin, and you see a couple of good news stories like that come out of what was ultimately a kind of a very, very dismal situation. Is great to see a positive outcome for some players.
Yeah, and speaking of good news stories, I was reading an article about yourself in one of the Nationals earlier on the season, and the fact that you're trying to juggle your teaching profession, which is just getting up and running, with playing Premier Division football. How are you finding that so far?
It's to be honest with you, it's very, very difficult at times, because you're looking at teaching every day, and you're also trying to attend college full time, and then also attend training. So it has been very, very difficult trying to manage my workload. Is tough, but it's worked out well so far. And obviously, I've achieved quite a good grade in my masters, and I'm also teaching full time, enjoying that, and playing in the Premier Division. It's for me, it's extremely busy, but it's been extremely, extremely enjoyable and rewarding to try and actually get a sense of the working world as such, and then playing in a professional setup and in a professional league is about as good a balance as you're going to get. And it's come from years and years and of work and hard graft and working behind the scenes and just keeping my head down. And I'm just finally glad that it's beginning to come to fruition, to be honest with you.
Yeah, look, I know you're a regular listener to the show every week, and myself and John wouldn't really bring many outside football issues onto the show, but I think this week we probably have to talk about the coronavirus and what's going on. And as you said, you're a teacher there, so that's a sector that might have to see closures over the next couple of weeks. There was a statement today from the FAI. They've had meetings with the league, and we're not really sure what's going to happen. As a footballer, is there much chat about it in the dressing room? And if League of Ireland games were to be postponed or played behind closed doors, how detrimental do you think that might be to some clubs in the league? That's obviously a worst case scenario at the moment.
No, absolutely. Well, from a footballer's point of view, it started off as a bit of a laugh and a joke about it, saying that we're not going to be seriously affected. Even Ryan Brennan came in the other day to train, and instead of giving me a knuckle touch, he's giving me an elbow touch. You know, just kind of trying to break the kind of negativity around it. Like, and I thought it was funny how we looked at it, but obviously in the last 48 hours, especially in school, we're getting constantly updated by the Department of Education and public sector talking about potentially closing the school for a number of weeks indefinitely, which is quite a frightening thing, especially because a lot of students in the schools that I've been in and working in South Dublin were actually away on skiing trips in Italy and things like this. And I think the question is, now we're just going to try and protect ourselves and protect the players. I think I heard as well that the handshake before games in the League of Ireland games is gone now. I think it's a walk past each other,
yeah,
from what I heard. So that's obviously a step in the direction of player safety. But then I was thinking about that even, and I don't know if the league is even going to do enough, because naturally after a game you're going to shake someone's hand. Like, there's only so much, and again with school, there's only so much protection you can actually have. Like, I don't understand or see how we're going to totally protect ourselves unless we have absolutely no school, and from a football point of view have no matches for a certain number of weeks. It's very, very up in the air and at the moment in both my professions. So I could very easily be sitting at home doing absolutely nothing for the next 4 weeks if this all keeps going in the direction it's going in.
Yeah, and just you mentioned there about the handshakes. We've seen that in the Premier League in England, and exactly what you've said will happen, has happened, that there's been no handshake before the game, but the minute the full-time whistle goes, everyone's hugging and shaking hands and swapping jerseys. So I don't think that's really going to do an awful lot. And I'm just thinking about first division clubs in particular that rely on their gate receipts and might be only getting maybe 500 or 600 people in the
Absolutely.
Gate.
Absolutely.
Surely there's going to have to be some type of consideration if there is going to be a shutdown of sporting fixtures. I mean, we can't have clubs going to the wall at the same time. I know this is a very serious situation. We are literally talking about a matter of life or death here. It puts football into a very minor perspective, but at the same time, it's a huge thing socially for people that their clubs are so important to them and key parts of the community. So it's really a big situation we're in here now. We probably never thought a couple of weeks ago that we were going to be talking about coronavirus and League of Ireland as the same subject, but here we are.
I know, and the issue that I'd have with it is that I know in our own case, a club like Shelburne has worked unbelievably hard to get ourselves back into the Premier Division, and what you're looking at now essentially is a lot of clubs in both divisions are heavily dependent on gate receipts in order to keep the clubs running. And one of the massive, if you look at clubs like Bohemians, Rovers, Dundalk, Shelburne over the last couple of years, they've had unbelievable marketing campaigns that have worked extremely hard to try and get bigger gates for games. And that's years and years and years of building and working towards sustainability. And all of a sudden, with the coronavirus, it looks like you could potentially have games behind closed doors, matches called off, and I just think that'll be detrimental for the league because, as you said, League of Ireland clubs in particular are heavily dependent on the income that they get from people actually going and watching the games, and with no money coming in from TV rights, that's the only real source of major income that you can have. So I think that could have a major effect going forward over the next couple of weeks. We'll have to wait and see what they plan to do about that, but if they end up playing the games behind closed doors, it'll severely affect clubs financially, especially the smaller clubs like you talked about, who are the heart and soul of some communities in the First Division.
Yeah, it's funny we should be having this discussion now, because if you heard it on last week's show, John Breyer was giving out about the total lack of prize money and the fact that we have no TV deal in this country. Is it going to take something as dramatic as this to make the FAI realise that this league cannot function, it cannot grow without structured prize money, and more importantly, some sort of sustainable TV deal?
Well, I think we've started going in that direction, haven't we? Obviously, there's a lot of speculation around an All-Ireland league, and that's obviously the direction we're going in. And if we're even having conversations like that, that just shows that that's just a red flag for me, to show that there's something fundamentally wrong with the structure of our league at the moment, and why there isn't enough prize money and promotion of the league. And we're obviously still way behind at board level in terms of developing and promoting the league. But hopefully, I know this sounds terrible, but in a way, something like this will hopefully show the people in the offices that we need much more backing and much more support than they've been giving us.
Yeah, because I mean, if you look at a league like the Premier League as an extreme example in England, if they were to play games behind closed doors, okay, it might knock a couple of million out on a match day, but I mean, they're still going to have unbelievable money coming in through other revenue streams, particularly TV deals. Whereas League of Ireland clubs will have no protection in a situation like this. So, Jack, look, before you go, I want to end on a more positive note. Big three games. I think the next three in particular on paper look fairly big for Shelburne.
Absolutely. So, obviously, we're Waterford on Friday, Finn Harps on the Monday, and then Sligo the following Saturday. I think we look at those games as potential opportunities to do well and try and accumulate a couple of points, because they're the teams that we'd be expecting to have to beat to obviously maintain our Premier Division status and maybe push on and finish in a higher end of the table. Like, you look at Waterford, who have also been very, very solid start, beat Pats away and had a couple of good results and even performed well against Rovers at times and against the bigger teams. And obviously, Finn Harps, we know it's going to be a very, very difficult place to go, especially on a Monday night. It's tough. It's tough for people coming out of work. And obviously, we'd have to get the day off and people were working and all that stuff. Now it's on, obviously, the day before Paddy's Day. And I think it's a tough place to go, because then obviously you come home and then Tuesday, however that result goes, Tuesday, everyone's back, everyone, Tuesday, Wednesday, people are kind of tired and fatigued. And then a lot of our boys, because we're part-time, essentially, are back to work on Wednesday. And we have to work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday without probably sufficient recovery before going to Sligo on Saturday. So it's going to be very, very difficult for us. We're under no illusion, but I do think there's a good belief in the camp that we could get a certain amount of points out of those games, and hopefully by the end of next week we'll be in a much healthier, stabilised position. So that's the aim.
Jack, it's been great catching up with you. Thanks very much for joining us, and best wishes for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Kieran. Appreciate it. Tell John I was asking for him, please.
Will do. Thanks very much, Jack.
Bye.
For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. And of course, we'll be previewing the Premier Division fixtures a little bit later on, but we're going to move on now to review the First Division Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We give both leagues equal coverage like they deserve. So let's chat about the First Division results from the weekend. John, Wexford 0, Galway 0. I think we both had an inkling that this might happen, didn't we?
Yeah, I had Galway down on my tips for last week, and I sort of ducked out of it at the last minute because I just have a feeling Wexford, they've not started too badly, and Galway haven't had the greatest of starts. And to be fair, they've had so much chopping and changing with the team. And I know we were worried about the likes of Ender Curran up front. Is he still got the quality there? I know he scored a lot of goals a few years ago, but that was a few years ago. We've seen him barely prolific for Longford Town since that, so I think there's concerns there, and just the sheer amount of changes, and the fact that they've stepped away from their ethos of Project DNA, and they've come with quite a few different signings, and they've not got off to the best of starts, and Shane Duggan's red card won't help them neither.
No, because he would have been one of the experienced heads that would have been, you know, a real standout signing for Galway. But I think I called this spot on in the pre-season show. I do think Galway will improve. As you said, there's been a lot of chopping and changing. Some of that's been forced and some of that's been probably tactical from Murphy. But I think, give it 5 or 6 weeks' time, I think this Galway team will eventually find a rhythm and start winning games against the likes of Wexford. But from a Wexford point of view, it's been a brilliant start for them.
Yeah, great start, and they might be disappointed not to win that one. You know, they were up against Galway 10 men for an hour or so. So you think that they might, on another day, they could have won that one, but they'll be very happy with the start they've made, and I think they're surprising a few people.
Yeah, no, 100%. Give credit to the young players there at Wexford and the management team They're certainly proving a few people wrong early doors, and I'd love to see that continue throughout the season. I think the attendance, you know, we're always keeping an eye on the attendance at Ferry Carrig. It has been quite low in the past, but I think it was about 241. I don't know how many away fans travel down, but you'd like to see that just steadily grow. If they could get 300 or 400 people in the gate every week at Ferry Carrig, it'd be a good starting point for them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it sure would. I think they're always going to be up against it without somebody. They've punted on a lot of young players, haven't they, there? And there's no real obvious goal scorer, I wouldn't have thought. But, in previous seasons, they've had Danny Furlan, haven't they? And you could always say, right, he's going to bang a few in. But, with such a young squad and, a few unknowns in that team and up front, they might struggle a little bit for goals. But look, I'm taking nothing away from them. It's a good start.
Yeah, and they travel to Athlone this weekend. So that could be a really good opportunity for Wexford to get up and running with a win this season. But so far, really, really good and impressive start from Wexford. Galway, they need to improve, but I think they will. So I think it's very much a case of watch and see for those two teams over the next couple of weeks. Let's move on to one I called absolutely bang on last week. I said Drogheda could potentially hand out a hammer into UCD given how they've defended early on this season, and that was the case. 5-1 to Drogheda. I think they were 3 or 4 nil up very early on in this one.
They were, and boy, how much are UCD missing Colly O'Neill? Oh my word, they're a dreadful performance here at Drogheda. But having said that, Drogheda played them off the park, and you're right, 17 minutes gone, game's over, it's 3-0. Doyle Adjumea and our friend Chris Lyons, who just keeps scoring. So 3-0 after 17 minutes, a 4-0 at half time. Jack Chute, good signing there for Drogheda. Yes. That's game over. Kerrigan pulled one back. Brennan made it 5-1 with a penalty, and it's a big warning shot for the league from Drogheda. I have to say that's a really good performance, but like I said, I think UCD are going to have some struggles this season.
Yeah, I think we were all surprised at the time when Colly O'Neill was essentially shown the door at UCD, but look, I think even he'd probably struggle this season given the amount of players they've lost. It's going to be a rebuilding process. It'll probably take UCD 2 or 3 years just to find a bit of stability again, but they really, really do need to sort out that back line in the immediate future, because they're just giving goals away for fun early on in the season, and it is because of the way they play. They try and play out from the back, and look, you have to give them credit for that, but at the same time, you can't be having results like this on a consistent basis. So UCD, they need to find they need to strike the balance very much so. But for Drogheda, bouncing back from that defeat to Longford last week, they created loads of chances in that defeat to Longford. So it looks like they could be very much the top scorers in the division again this year. Let's move on to one we found difficult to call, and in the end it was a tight one. Cabinteely 1, Shamrock Rovers 2-0.
Yeah, 1-0 on this one at Cabinteely. I know you're going to probably have a chat about the pitch there, aren't you, Kieran? But they had a man sent off as well in there for Cabinteely. Blackburn sent off in the 70th minute. And I suppose quite a surprise then when they actually won it through Shane Barr's, their 90th minute late winner there for them. Rovers 2. I think we saw when they played Longford, there may be lack... Well, they definitely lack a bit of know-how and experience up front, and they're gonna get a few shutouts unless they they can find somebody that's gonna score a few goals.
Yeah, I agree with you there, John. And I do think though the fact that Cabinteely went down to 10 and came back to win it so late, it shows them a good characteristic and a good togetherness in the squad, doesn't it?
It definitely does. They're going to be awkward again this season, aren't they, Cabinteely?
Yeah.
They were up there about last season, and they've a wily old management team there at Cabinteely, and they've got off to an absolute flying start. But word of warning, we saw Athlone get off to a flying start the season 2 ago. So who knows? It could all come crashing down. It's still early, and we'll see how they get on the next couple of matches. And you were talking about Galway. They've got to go to Galway next week, so that's going to be a really interesting match next week. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. But you touched on it yourself there. I think we have to raise it because we've mentioned Dalymount Park was in very poor condition at the weekend. We mentioned Sligo that uncharacteristically their pitch was poor. But Stradbroke is a pitch we've highlighted before on the show, and I thought the condition of the pitch looked absolutely dreadful. Very little grass on it, very bobbly, and the rugby markings are still on it, John. I mean, if we're trying to package a league here and present it as being a professional league, that's not on, is it?
No, that's really poor. that's really poor. And having said that, you see it sometimes with the big stadiums, don't you? You've seen it with Wembley, with where maybe they've still got markings from the American football or something like that, but that's poor, isn't it? And this is always going to be a problem. It's always going to rear its head. You know, they're going to have to find a pitch that's just solely for that, for football use, because otherwise, I mean, rugby matches on it, the pitch is just ruined in this weather.
Mm. Does it give Cabinteely an unfair advantage? Because, I mean, when we see games in Stradbroke, I can't think of too many times I've gone there and watched a good game of football break out. It usually turns into a bit of a slog, and Cabinteely are absolutely fantastic at, you know, grinding out results like this, 1-0 wins, and just been a real thorn in the side of teams. And look, that's the way they want to play. It's effective. They got into the playoffs last year, and credit to them. But is it dragging down the opposition to a certain level at times as well, that the more footballing sides in the league can't really go there and play?
I think you're right. I think it does encourage teams when they go into Stradbroke, especially early season, as you say, they've got to go more direct, haven't they? They can't play the nice passing game on the deck. You know, there is a lot more direct long ball when it's like there. So, I'd love to see him get a different pitch, or, you know, just be sole use. Because at the moment, it's not a great advert, is it, for the league?
No. Look, I think we've said enough on that. We'll move on to the next game, which had plenty of goals. We've been worried about Cove this season and their ability to score goals, but in the end, it was their ability to score goals that dug them out of a tricky situation here. 3-2 winners against Athlone, who had a couple of penalties on the night.
Yeah, it was a bit of a ding-dong, this match. Murphy opened up for Cove, and then Hurley in the 27th minute, that's David, not Liz. Meenan got two back for Athlone, both from the penalty spot, before Cove went down to 10 men with a Dylan Walsh red. But just like Cabinteely, they got a late winner through Ian Turner, who I highlighted as going to be a key player for them this season. His 82nd minute winner gave them the points against Athlone.
Yeah, and you kind of touched on it in previous shows that you wanted to see Cove get up and running as soon as they could, particularly in front of their home fans, because it's good to keep as many as you can interested down there. Athlone, they'll probably be encouraged by this. They obviously started a little bit later in the season than the other sides, because their first game was postponed. So maybe they're just slowly finding their feet, and it was an experienced player that tucked away those couple of penalties in Meenan.
Yeah, well, they're gonna need Meenan to really stand up, aren't they? Because they've not got too many experienced players, and of him and of Cool Strain as well there. But you know, apart from that, it's a very, very young side, very inexperienced side. So they're gonna need a lot from the likes of Meenan. So look, they'll be encouraged with that. A couple of goals away from home, they'll be disappointed not to get a point after, especially after Cove went down to 10. But I think they'll be hopeful of getting the first points against Wexford next week.
Yeah, and very young team again at Lone, so they'll probably learn lessons from that, playing against 10 men away from home and trying to, you know, push on and get another go. They'll probably learn something from that. And look, I can already hear people saying he's going on about pitches, and Longford were the team this week that had their game called off because their pitch was waterlogged.
Yeah, I think the problem is where Longford Town have the pitch, you know, that area around it floods a lot, Kieran. Yeah. And, you know, they're a fantastic groundsman and grounds team there at Longford, but with just the sheer amount of rain, there's just no hope of playing in that particular area, unfortunately.
Yeah, as you said, the ground staff do an absolutely phenomenal job. It's always up there. I think it won a pitch of the year last season or the season before. But remember when we all went out there for the Rovers 2 game, we thought there was absolutely no hope that game was going to be on, and they managed to get the game played. But in hindsight, they probably would have been better off to just postpone that game and rest the pitch, because you know yourself that was at the game, the pitch was absolutely wrecked after that game, and that probably did have an effect on this game being postponed. But as you said, when we went out there on the opening night of the season and there was a game on, we were all delighted. So look, there's no way you can really plan for these things.
No, and I'm sure once if we ever get any bit of decent weather, they'll have that pitch back spick and span for next home game.
Yeah, let's move on and talk about the fixtures coming up in the First Division this weekend. And don't forget, we've still got our weekly charity bet to come. And John, I've finally chipped in to the charity pot.
Yeah, it's about time, really, isn't it? Because I thought it was a one-man show when it came to the bet of the week. But about time you got your finger out and contributed, Kieran.
Yeah, we both had winning bets last week. Now, they were at small enough odds. I think we won about 18 and 15 quid each, so over 30 quid. But we've doubled up the charity pot, so over 60 quid in there now. And as I said, the charity bet still to come at the end of the show tonight, sponsored by bar1racing.com, who provide us with a 10 euro charity bet every week. So let's see if we can double it up again this week. Let's start with the first division fixtures, though. UCD against Longford Town. Longford, they'll fancy their chances here, won't they?
Oh, they will, because they'll have a look at the at that match against Drogheda and see how bad UCD were at the back, and they will really fancy the chances of going there and getting a good result, especially as you know it's normally a decent pitch, and you know it should be conducive to Town's footballing ethos, shall we say. So I'd expect Longford to win this one.
Yeah, got to go with a Longford win. As I said, UCD very, very open at the back this season. Longford, obviously, as I said, against Drogheda, they got the win, but I would like to see them create a bit more. Same goes with the Shamrock Rovers 2 game, but they'll be full of confidence and they'll be raring to go after that game was called off last week as well. And I think we should also just quickly, John, pass on our condolences to Longford Town midfielder Ray Durbin, who was on our show last week. His grandfather passed away this week, a former chairman at the club. So condolences from myself and John to A on that. Let's move on to Galway against Cabinteely. This is a big game, isn't it?
It is, because Galway haven't started brightly, have they? And whereas Cabinteely are currently top of the league, so all eyes would say an away win. But I've got a sneaking suspicion this is where Galway get the season up and running, Ciarán. I think they're going to beat Cabinteely. Cabinteely much better at home than they are away. We talked about the advantage the pitch that gives them. I just think this is the match that might just kickstart Galway's season.
Yeah, I'm getting this one difficult to call. You say that the Cabinteely are much better at home than they are away, but they play in a very similar fashion no matter where they go. And look, we've seen them last year. Longford couldn't get a win against them in the five games they played against them, three in the league and two in the playoffs. They couldn't get a win against them. They came down to Longford and they imposed their style of play on Longford as opposed to the other way around. So I hope it's not coming across that we're saying Cabinteely only win games at home because of the condition of the pitch. That's certainly not the case. They have a very organised and regimental style of play that they stick with, and it mightn't be popular with everyone, but they get results and it works. So they'll go to Terry Land or Amy DC Park, as it's now known, and they'll play exactly the same way they always do. And it's going to be very difficult for Galway. And if Galway feel the same sort of side that we've seen in the opening couple of games here, I wouldn't fancy them to get the win, John, because we've said it already. I don't think Endicoran cuts it at this level. We're waiting to see what the situation was with Vinnie Fatterley and Mikey Place. They haven't really featured yet this season. So if they can get those two on the pitch and get them together up front, then Galway should have enough firepower to get by Cabinteely. But I think it very much lies with the starting 11 that we'll see. So I'm going to skip this one this week.
Some questions about this match as well with the pitch, Ciarán, because I've seen a couple of pictures of Eamon Deasy today, and there's quite a bit, there's quite a lot of surface water there, so which is understandable with the drenching that we've had over the last week or two. But you know, if there's much more rain between now and the weekend, that could be under threat.
Right. Bray against Cove.
I'd expect Bray to win this, and Cove beat Athlone, but I just think there might be a little bit of a gap here.
Yeah,
I'm going to go for a Bray win on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to follow you on that one. Probably not too much analysis we can give to this one, but I just think, as you said, there might be a gulfing class between Cove and Bray this season, and I'd fancy Bray to win it by a couple of goals at least.
Yeah, I think they've just got a better team, haven't they?
Yeah. And look, that all comes back to investment at the end of the day. Cove just can't shop in the same market as Bray, and Bray have the home advantage here, so I'd very much expect a home win, and I'd be disappointed if they don't get one.
Yeah. Athlone versus Wexford, Ciarán. This is that's a real tricky one to call. I've ended up going for a draw on this one. Yeah, it's just really tricky. I don't know if you can separate these two, can you?
Yeah, Wexford have already grinded out a couple of draws this season, so that mightn't be a bad shout, but I am really finding this one difficult to call. You've got that bit more experience probably in the Athlone side with Meenan and Cool Strain. But I like what Wexford are doing this season, giving the youngsters a chance. They've started well. I'm going to go with an away win.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, that, that'll be very disappointing for Athlone if it is in a way when, but certainly a great start for Wexford if they can get a win there. Rovers 2 against high-flying Drogheda. Drogheda 5-1 against UCD. Rovers 2 going down to Cabo. I'm struggling with anything apart from an away win here.
Yeah, on paper, this shouldn't be anything other than an away win, but Rovers 2 have made it really, really difficult for every side they've faced this season. They've done really well coming into the league, especially with all the controversy and talk off the pitch. They've zoned out from that. They've focused on their job on the pitch and putting in performances, and they've done that. So credit to Aidan Price and his players. But for me, on paper, Drogheda should be winning this game if they have genuine title ambitions this term.
Yeah, I agree. So away wins all round.
Let's move on to the Premier Division. Cork against Bohemians. Are we only going for an away win here?
Well, I'm going for an away win. Yeah, I'm going to agree with, if you're going for an away win, that I'm certainly going for the away win. I've not been impressed with Cork so far this season. I don't know how long the goalkeeper's out, but I can't see him back for this one. Bo's, they've settled again as they have done last season. They've been quite impressive some matches, and I think they will have too much of an experienced side for Cork in this one. Yeah, I'm going for an away win.
Yeah, I think Bo's have just found their rhythm in the last couple of games, so I'm going for a Bo's win there. The likes of Twardek, Mandrew, they just have too much quality for a Cork team that are really lacking.
I think there are a lot more players that know the league as well and are settled. And whereas Cork, we talked about so many new faces, so many players that haven't played League of Ireland. I just think it's going to be an away win this.
Yeah, we're very much on the same hymn sheet there. Let's move on to the next one. Derry against Sligo. Sligo still the only team in the league without a point. Improved performances against Bowes and Rovers of late. Can they get something on the board away from home at the Brandywell?
No. It's going to be home win, Kieran. I think this is one where Derry again gets started. They've struggled a little bit. They've been a little bit inconsistent to start the season with, but I think this game will give them a good opportunity to get 3 points and head up towards the right side of the table. Sligo, yeah, you have said they've improved. But they're just not showing enough for me, Kieran, to make me think they can go to the Brandywell and get anything in this. So, home win.
Very blunt from John Breyer there, Sligo fans. I apologise for that, but I'm going to go with it.
Kieran, I've been right so far, haven't I? I've been right.
Yeah.
I said they were going to struggle.
Yeah.
I said they were going to finish bottom. They've shown nothing to say they're not going to.
You think they'll finish bottom behind Cork?
I've said it'd be them two in the bottom two for a start, so I can't see anything that's made me change my mind so far.
Yeah, no, you did call it early doors on Sligo, to be fair. Derry, I think Declan Devine, he looks like a manager that can really get a reaction out of his players when he wants to. I'd expect him to maybe make a couple of changes after that poor performance in Waterford. I think they'll get the home win, but they mightn't blow Sligo away. Let's move on to the next one. Shells against Waterford. Another big game, this one. Tough to call.
Yeah, I found out of all the matches in the league, this one was the toughest one to call. Shells obviously went down in that derby against Bowes. Waterford, we know, been pretty inconsistent, but we'll be buoyed by the result last week. I'm just going with home advantage. I think Shells will win this, but just by the odd goal. But it is very tough to call that one.
Yeah, I'm going to follow you. They've been good at Talca since they've come back into the league. They gave Dundalk a game there. They beat Pats. And obviously, they got an away win in Cork as well. But I think they're another side that they stick to the same type of game plan every week. They're very direct. They're well organised. Look, it didn't work against Bowes. But as we said, they probably should have took some of their chances in the first half. And it might have been a very different story that night. And if they can just tighten up slightly at the back, because you were disappointed with the way they gave away a couple of those goals against Bowes, if they can just tweak a few things here and there, I think they'll be fine, Shells, and I'm going to follow them for a home win here.
Dundalk hosting St. Pat's, so big one for Mr. O'Donnell, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm afraid I'm going to be blunt with Pat's here. I think Dundalk are going to have a very comfortable night's work.
Yeah, well, they gave Harps a bit of a pasting, didn't they? And it could have been 5 in that match, so I'd expect a home win here, and like you say, I think it'll be quite comfortable.
Yeah, I just don't know what's happened with Pats at the start of this season. If you look at their team on paper, there's plenty of quality in it, but the performances we've seen from them, they just don't look good enough. So it's a real mind-boggler.
Do you think it's an inexperienced manager that's not quite getting the maybe the shape right with that team, or do you think it's a case of the individuals are above the team in that St. Pat's outfit? I don't know. Something's just not quite right yet, is it?
Yeah, as I said, it's a bit of a head scratcher. I know O'Donnell's he's drastically changed that team, so it's probably not a great comparison to draw. But obviously, they had an experienced manager in Liam Buckley. And towards the last couple of seasons there, it really didn't work for him. The thing went a bit stale and everyone was crying out for change. So I thought the appointment of O'Donnell was a brilliant move from Pats. I just don't know, John. I don't really know what is wrong there at the moment. The only glaringly obvious thing I can see is the lack of a clinical striker. But aside from that, their build-up play hasn't been what I've expected. They look more open at the back than I thought they would be. But maybe that lack of quality on the ball so far, maybe that's been down to the fact that they haven't got that striker, and they're looking up and they're like, well, where do we go from here? Who's going to put the ball in the net? We can pass it around all we want, but we're not going to convert the chances. So maybe they're just a little bit low on confidence. Maybe that's the conclusion I'm going to draw.
Yeah, well, a trip to Oriel is not going to help if they're low on confidence, is it? So you know, they may have to wait another week to try and get some of that confidence back, but I think this could be quite routine for Dundalk, and I'm fully expecting them to win that.
Yeah, and I've seen a couple of Pats fans online as well. They're very much drawn to the conclusion that this is going to be it could be a bad night for Pats. I'd love to hear from a couple of Pats fans, if there is any of you still tuning into us. Get in touch with us on social media and give us your views on Pat's start to the season and what's gone right, what's gone wrong. We'd love to hear from you. Let's move on to Shamrock Rovers. They host Finn Harps. On paper, is this a comfortable win for the home side?
On paper, it's a comfortable win for the home side, and I have to say, I think on the pitch it'll be a comfortable win for the home side. I don't give Harps too much hope going here. I mean, there is a little bit of a gulfing class between the top two and the rest of the league, as far as I'm concerned. I think Harps are going to struggle going to Tower. They'll make it difficult. We've seen the pressing games, Gorge. You know, they'll hurry and harass the defence. But I just think in Rovers, creative midfielders, and they've now got Gaffney in there, they'll have too much for Harps. So a comfortable home win here.
Yeah, we're entering into one of them busy periods now in the league, early on in the season, where we have a ridiculous amount of fixtures coming up. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Ollie Horgan decides to rotate here and maybe just say, look, this isn't our target to put it up to teams like Shamrock Rovers. Not to say that they won't put in an effort and probably make it difficult for Rovers at times, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, he's done it before, hasn't he?
Yeah, maybe just he might pinpoint a different fixture where they have a better chance of picking up the 3 points. For me, Rovers, too much quality in the midfield. They'll dominate the ball, and in Green and Gaffney, they should have plenty of goal threat as well. So I'm going for a Shamrock Rovers win there.
Well, now he's had his chips. I fully expect Aaron Green to start banging them in. So yeah, definite home win.
As I said, we're going to have the charity bet now to round off the show, proudly sponsored by BarOneRacing.com. They give us a €10 charity bet each and every week. We split a fiver each way, and we tried to make a few pounds for charity. We've currently raised over €60 for local autism services in Dundalk, and we're going to try and add to that pot now. I'll give you my teams this week, John. I'm going to go Longford Town away from home against UCD. I'm going to go Bray to defeat Cove at home. Bowes to win away at Turner's Cross, Dundalk to defeat St. Pat's, and Shamrock Rovers to defeat Finn Harp. So a fivefold from me this week.
Wow, okay. Right, you always like to make it a bit more complicated and throw a couple of extra teams in. But look, I've gone for four here. So I've gone for Derry to beat Sligo, Shamrock Rovers to beat Harps, and two from the other division, Longford Town to go and win at UCD, and Drogheda to beat Rovers' second team.
That Derry Sligo one, I know I said Derry will win it, but that would worry me. I wouldn't like to have an awful lot on that one.
No, well, look, I think Derry will have enough to beat them. So, and yeah, I think it just looks a more obvious home win than some of the other ones that are out there. I haven't seen enough of Bray yet to say that they're definitely going to beat Cove, so that's why I didn't go with that. So look, and both. Was away from home against Cork, you know, you'd expect them to win, but again, it's still going to Turner's Cross and getting a win. It's still, you know, in seasons before we would have said that, so that's a tricky one, but yeah, they've obviously more chance of doing it, but you know, it could be a draw, you just don't know. So look, that's my four anyway. Hopefully both come up anyway, Kieran, and we can add to that pot.
Yeah, and hopefully we have a full contingent of fixtures and weather and other issues won't play their part this weekend.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not here next week, Kieran. I'm away over in the UK, so I'm not taking in a match, unfortunately, but I won't be here next week, so I don't think we're going to be able to get a show up next week, but hopefully the week after there's still plenty of matches on and we're not all stuck indoors.
Yeah, I might see if I can draft someone in next week, so don't take John Breyer's word for it.
We're not writing you off yet.
Yeah, we might.
I'll have to get a charity bet ready then, won't I?
Yeah, we might have a show next week. Leave it with me, but that's where we're going to leave this week. So as I said, it was supposed to be a slightly reduced show, but it's gone well over the hour mark now again. So I hope you've enjoyed it nonetheless, and we'll be back to having more interviews next week. Obviously just a very, very busy week for ourselves with the Cheltenham Festival been on, and for John Breyer trying to get as much hand sanitizer gel out to the nation as he possibly can.
Very good, Karen. Very good.
Look, John, enjoy your trip to the UK. Thanks for joining us again this week, and we'll speak to you again in the coming weeks.
I've just realised I'm in Sligo on Sunday night, so I better keep my head down, hadn't I, after the grief I'm giving them this season.
Yeah, don't be calling into any of the local boozers.
I'll keep my BTS hoodie out of the way.
Yeah, definitely so. Folks, thanks for listening. John, we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Kieran.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.